Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, this is Guilty Movie Pleasures. In-depth discussion on movies, no matter how guilty they make you feel.
All right, there we are. What's up, Schmoville? Welcome back. Your first Guilty Movie Pleasure of 2015. I am joined today with the co-host of the main show and my good buddy, Mark Ellis.
Thank you. Happy New Year, Josh.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Thank you for coming on the show here.
It's good to be back in town. Good to be back with you. Hang out with you on New Year's like many people would assume that we do, but we hung out for the playoff game.
We did.
And I think the Steelers would like to employ some of the methods used in the film we're talking about to replay said game.
You've been waiting for that. You've been just waiting for that when we started.
Look, I got a call yesterday and you said, hey, do you want to come on GMP this week? And I was like, of course, I love hanging out with you, my buddy. Who are we talking about? What movie? And when you told me the movie, it just all came rushing back to me.
It's a classic. And, you know, I feel like if we're going to be talking about a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, at least for like the next 3 or 4, you're going to have to be on the program because there are very few people that enjoy Van Damme as much as you do and me.
It's a little sad, and it's something I've been working with my therapist about, is that how much I know about these Van Damme films, because I'll be honest, I haven't seen a lot of Van Damme movies in the last 5 or 10 years, but I just saw I saw them so many and with such just repeated fervor when I was a youth in my formative years that all my gray matter absorbed all that information.
We had Lionheart taped off TV off of VHS. We had Bloodsport taped off of VHS off TV with the commercials and everything. Yeah. I would love to go back and watch those VHSs because, first of all, my parents still have a VCR in the basement.
They really?
Oh, yeah. It's a VCR-DVD combo, but my mom still likes the VCR and so does my dad.
I just prefer things I trust.
Yeah, exactly. She didn't trust the DVR until like 4 years ago. But some of those old commercials, I'm sure we had Lionheart, Bloodsport, and of course this movie we're talking about today, Time Cop, and then the Pittsburgh legend that is Sudden Death.
Sudden Death, also directed by, as you pointed out, Peter Hyams, who did Time Cop.
Correct.
And he also did the sequel to 2001, The Space Odyssey, 2010, The Year We Make Contact, which was not quite as well received by critics or Stone College kids.
Let's just say they won't be doing that one on Profiles anytime soon. Manson Malone are not fans of 2010, nor are they fans of 2012, that movie starring Cusack.
A limo driver saving the world.
It's God, okay.
What a
He's
movie.
A limo driver.
See, I think that's how you approach a discussion about Time Cop, is you talk about movies that are clearly crappier than that film.
Way crappier.
And what I will say about Time Cop, how I'll open the conversation, is
before we get into the conversation, I have to address
it's your show.
Something. I have to just address something real quick.
Uh-oh. The counter splits?
I'm not wearing pants right now. No. Before we get into it, the Christmas episode, Jingle All the Way, was Steve Simone's last show as the co-host of Guilty Movie Pleasures. He just has a lot of other time commitments that are really keeping him away from the show, and he really wanted to be involved in some other projects that he has on the, you know, the front burner here for 2015. So he has left the show. He's welcome to come back on any time. He knows that. He can call in, whatever. Still obviously a very great friend of the show. We will have a new co-host here in 2 weeks.
Ooh.
He's a very good friend of mine and a very good friend of the show. He's been on the main show twice, I believe.
Twice.
He's a legend at Comic-Con. He's got, as far as Comic-Con attendees go, he has his face on the Mount Rushmore of Comic-Con attendees. He's the guy that helped get our interns, Cody, he didn't do anything as far as Comic-Con goes, that jerk, but he is the intern for this show and I love him. Cobster and JTE helped him get in a bunch of stuff in Hall H this year at Comic-Con.
He's the guy to see at Comic-Con, yeah.
Any party you went to, he was there. He has the most, I'm serious when I say he's got the most Blu-rays and DVDs of any person I've ever met.
And he's got the most probably VHS tapes too, so he's good friends with your mom.
Yeah,
and
obviously.
If you turn on your TV set for any 45-minute period, you're going to see a lot of this guy's face. He's in every other television commercial. He makes a lot of appearances in sitcom, stuff like that, so he's the perfect. He's got mic skills.
He does. He was a very talented comedian, just a very funny guy, lover of movies, and a good friend of the Schmoes No Team.
Man, we're building this guy
where
up.
We are. Ben Begley is going to be my new co-host of Guilty Movie Pleasures. You guys can find him on Twitter, on Facebook, B-E-G-L-E-Y, Ben Begley. No relation to Ed Begley Jr., but he does love the environment. A recent married gentleman. Again, find him on Twitter, Ben Begley. Welcome him into Schmoville, onto the Guilty Movie Pleasures show. He'll be here in 2 weeks. Our first show together will be Tuesday, January 20th. Every show live streamed here on the Popcorn Talk Network, 1 p.m. PST. All right, Mark, let's get into it.
Let's talk Time Cop. Did you see this film in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater.
I saw it. I saw this picture in the theater, yeah, and it kicked off a run of Van Damme movies that I saw in the theater opening weekend.
Well, 94 was Time Cop, and then 95 was Sudden Death. So this Peter Hyams with both of these movies, like we said when we were kind of talking, is Time Cop and Sudden Death are kind of basically the same movie because Van Damme plays a cop who has to save the day against an evil politician.
Yes.
Those are the only things. I'm not saying as if there are any other plot lines other than the main thing is they're cops that have to save the day against an evil politician.
But the problem with Sudden Death is kind of a bummer in retrospect is because it was such a Die Hard knockoff. It was Die Hard in a hockey rink, whereas Under Siege was Die Hard on a boat.
Right.
And what Time Cop did, when that movie came out, it was by far Van Damme's most successful when you talk about a critically acclaimed film, because even critics said, hey, you know what? This movie, it's not bad.
It's pretty accurate. If you go on IMDb and read Roger Ebert's, it's like a litany about how much he appreciated Time Cop.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
And it's rewatchable besides the fact that it has the flaw that normal time travel films have is that it is now past the future, which is what Back to the Future 2 just went through. A lot of tweets about people wanting hoverboards at midnight.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that commercial with the hoverboards? It's like they're magnetic hoverboards, and you can only like ride them on this certain surface. But they're magnetic hovers.
That's just some rich guy cracking the whip on a bunch of people.
They're 10 grand a piece.
Like he's got Back to the Future 2 playing on a loop. Like you see this 2015. We need to have these on the streets.
They tried. There was an effort there, and I feel like we're getting close to the hoverboards. What we aren't getting closer to is what this movie took place. The future was 2004.
Yeah.
That's as far as they had thought.
Yeah, okay? We didn't even know if Ross and Rachel were going to make it in 2004.
We didn't even know if I was going to graduate college in 2004, Mark. But it goes – the beautiful part about – and what makes this movie definitely a guilty movie pleasure is the dialogue is quite brutal
at
the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, it starts off in a mall.
Yeah.
Right?
Van Damme and Mia Sara, his wife from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And
Van
Damme
how they do it in
showing
that
off his Wolverine boots. And that's where you know this movie only has a certain height it can reach.
Correct.
Because literally the first scene, some guy tries to steal a lady's purse, and thank God, Jean-Claude Van Damme is in the
perfect
mall.
Perfect split kick.
But they don't, with his work boots. They're tempted to do where he just punches him, but he plays it cool.
Right.
Unlike a previous Van Damme movie where John Woo would have him in slow motion doing ballet for 10 minutes. He just... look, you know I can beat the crap out of you. Give the nice lady a purse back. Let's be adult. This movie was basically saying to every kid watching this film, hey, we're going to be adults about this.
There will be no violence at the first 2 minutes, but the rest of the movie will be very, very violent.
And some weird-looking futuristic dudes in trench coats.
Oh, yeah. But I think the beautiful part about that scene is everybody knows that Van Damme is the most flexible man in action sports.
Pretty good.
Movies, right?
Yeah.
So he shows in tight jeans and work boots that he can still get that foot up there.
Hold it. He can hold that.
Oh, yeah. There's no when you used to stretch?
Yeah,
hold your belly button to stay on one foot. Did everybody ever tell you that?
This dude was doing yoga before the craze.
Yeah, he ate yoga for breakfast.
He ate yoga, then he probably did some blow.
Some Greek yoga.
Did
you see what I did there?
All right. Ben Bagley, get in here. I'm done.
So, but if you notice when the dude, he takes the purse, gives it back to the woman, she's like, thank you. And then the robber guy just walks away. Nobody, he doesn't get arrested.
I think he learned his lesson. He read the shoe, and then he said, between the lines, and he said, I better get the F out of here.
Right. And we know that you can swear in this movie, so this is R-rated. Like most 90s, see, here's the beautiful part, is that in the 90s, the action movies were R.
Yeah.
They were R-rated, and they dropped the F-bomb whenever they damn well pleased because they were cops.
Uh-huh.
And that, and I mean, you're in an action scene, you're going to drop the F-bomb. So he's in that mall, and we notice that the guys in this trench coat, they're obviously villains. I mean,
yeah, and they're dressed just the, they looked at their fashion is just a little bit different than everybody else right. in that mall. And Van Damme notices it. He looks up, and he's like, I don't know who those guys are, but I'm gonna go home and bang my wife because it's raining.
If I'm not mistaken, I have not seen that haircut in a Supercuts magazine. At our local
you're
Supercuts,
see, you're not gonna see Van Damme's haircut in a lot of Supercuts either. No. It's not the best he's ever looked. It's not the best hairdo.
But in real time, it's great. But when he comes back from the future, his futuristic hair, his 2004 haircut is more like 1984. His 1994 haircut is perfectly placed in 1994. I think we skipped over the beginning when they're setting the stage. The beautiful part, I think, how many times have I said beautiful part? The
it's a beautiful film.
It's a great, Sovereign. Great film. Is that in a 1994 action film, the guy who's going to play the main villain, we know he's the main villain in that opening scene when they start talking about time travel and they're setting up this time travel thing. It's like, this guy looks nice. This guy looks pretty nice. This guy looks evil, but he's a senator. You're like, well, he's going to be the bad guy.
We Ron Silver, who is, may he rest in peace. And Ron Silver, he was, great. He's really underrated as far as acting goes.
Some of his credits are incredible. I mean, he's in a lot of things.
And he has a ball in this movie playing a bad guy. And you bring up that scene where they're talking about time travel and how the good doctor actually did it. It's so, that's what separates this movie from a typical 90s action vehicle where it's like, no, they really are getting into some stuff. They're embracing what this is. And it felt realistic. And what I loved about Peter Himes' direction is that opening scene when you're back in the Civil War and you got that shipment of gold that's going to General Lee and you got a guy and then he's got these like futuristic looking Uzis. And it's like, that was a gritty action scene. I like that.
And the guy kind of looked like Bill Paxton's ugly brother with a missing tooth. Like, he really did.
He did.
He's like, I'll take the gold now. You're like, all right, Paxton. And just take it easy. He's like, no. Yeah, I'll light you up. Every gun in this movie either had a flashlight or a laser pointer.
That's
Did you
what
notice
the
that?
Future looked like. That's what it was. Back in the 90s, it wasn't about the weapon itself. It was about the laser sight on top of the weapon.
True, true. They were all trying to get to that Predator level of laser point accuracy. So then you're in this scene where his wife, those guys from the mall track him down. And they blow up his house and they kill his wife.
They kill his wife, yeah. And it's some sort of thing where they came back from the future, which we'll find out later in the film, to destroy him because he is mucking up Ron Silver, McCombs' presidential campaign.
Now, here's the other thing, too, is with time travel movies, a lot of times for me, it makes it kind of difficult, is when you start traveling back in time multiple times and messing up with the time-space continuum of who remembers what, how they remember what. And I really feel like this movie did an okay job of that.
The butterfly effect worked well enough, but I think a lot of it's just under the protective coat of the fact that there is the TEC, that there is this time enforcement thing. It's this part of the police force,
right,
where they're the guys regulating time travel.
Mark, it's under a Senate subcommittee, you dick.
That's right. And so it's hard to get funding. It looks like they're in some sort of underground. This movie, the future takes place in like CTU in 24 after they found out there's a mole.
Yes.
And, like, part of it's been blown up, and it just kind of looks like a DeVry warehouse.
And the time travel machine looks a lot like what they used to put the crash test dummies on and things. And it's like, put it on the track, get it up to 88 miles an hour, and then get it into some cellophane. That was the special effects was just cellophane.
Well, unfortunately, Josh, if you look down there and you see those two red dots, they didn't use crash test dummies for the future. May they rest in peace, the Vollmer twins. Who ate it on one of their first missions, and we don't talk about them.
We don't talk about
them. And we didn't, you can't put a fresh coat of paint on there. Like, you can't get rid of those red spots.
No.
Come on.
It's okay. You leave things there from remembrance, Mark.
Yeah.
Right? It's why there are gravestones for people like Jim Morrison.
Okay. You know, they have gravestones for everybody.
The Vollmer twins didn't get one. They only got a red dot at the end of the laugh track.
Yeah, and whatever, 1970s disco party they were going back in time to.
You think Haim's son was like, Dad, you should make the Time Cop Mobile like a Hot Wheels track. rev it up, right in.
And then you go into the past and you just... And then you're not really sure. This is what always confused me about Time Cop.
Okay.
Is how do you pinpoint exactly when you come back? Because one time he comes back and he's about to get hit by a truck.
Right.
Another time he comes back and he's like in the middle of a body of water.
Yeah.
And it's like that technology should not be used regularly until you know exactly where you're going to end up.
Right. Okay. So they launch in a car and the car just disappears. Where does the car go when they land in those places. The car is nowhere to be found.
I think the car stops, and it just launches the person into it, and that's why the Vollmer twins got, bam, they got sandwiched, because something happened with the time portal.
Yeah, but if you notice in the actual time portal on the Hot Wheels track in the DeVry University Mark Ellis sponsored laboratory, sponsored
the
by
the Hot Wheels, yeah.
It's gone. It disappears into the cellophane too, not just the bodies.
Yeah.
So where does the car go? The car doesn't launch him into the water. The car doesn't launch him under the truck.
I'm not Doc Brown. I don't know what a gigawatt does.
Again, a guilty movie pleasure subject that we can all talk about is, where does the car go? Maybe somebody that can answer where the car goes.
Oh, do we have a scientist on the line?
We have a scientist. He's a college graduate.
Josh, we need PhDs.
He's currently studying his PhD in Chili's ology on how to order a two for two. Ladies and gentlemen, the intern of this program, he's fresh off his New Year's Eve celebration with NSYNC on their Titanic-like cruise around the Caribbean. Ladies and gentlemen, Cody Hall.
All right, Cody.
What's up, guys?
What's up, man? Happy New Year. Welcome back, buddy.
Nice. How's it going?
Good, man. Good. Now, did you watch Time Cop?
I did. I watched it yesterday just to refresh my brain, but this is actually like the first Van Damme movie I ever saw.
Ooh.
How did it hit you when you initially saw it as a boy? Were you like, oh, this movie's awesome, this guy's the next great action star? Or were you like, yeah, it's okay?
I was just fascinated because he's, as far as I know, the only action star who ever kicks people regularly, you know? Like, I was like, why isn't he using a gun? He's just kicking people. It's awesome. It was so cool.
That's a great point, but I think Van Damme would answer that by kicking you in the face.
Yeah.
That's true. With his Wolverines.
Listen, Cody, Jean-Claude Van Damme, a.k.a. Max Walker, he lives by his own set of rules, okay? He travels in time whenever he damn well pleases. He puts a Wolverine boot on a robber with rollerblades, and by God, if he doesn't take on the past, the future, the past again, and then the future again, you don't mess with Max Walker, okay?
That's right.
Now, Cody, I'm gonna give you both taglines to the movie, and you tell me which one you like better, okay?
Okay.
And I'll do it in the movie voice. They killed his wife 10 years ago. There's still time to save her. Murder is forever until now. Or, turn back the clock and you're history.
I love the second one just for how direct and pointed it is.
It is pretty good.
I think that's a great tagline. Yeah. Yeah. Now, when I remember the poster just saying that there's still time to save her. And then I also remember the turn back the clock in your history, which makes perfect sense because, look, this isn't just a time travel movie where we're like, oh, we just found this mechanism that lets us go see dinosaurs. This one is like, no, we need to police this stuff because other people are doing – this movie was made in response to all the other time travel movies where people were going back and trying to get their parents to hook up. Marty McFly was mucking up the butterfly effect.
Right.
And so this is why you need this law enforcement agency, and who better to have on your team than not only Jean-Claude Van Damme, but also Bruce McGill as his leader, who played D-Day in Animal House.
Matusek? Yeah, he's awesome.
When D-Day from Animal House is the guy in charge of time security,
there
that's
goes
not a good
your
thing.
Pension. There goes your pension. Hey, if you notice on the, if you have the Time Cop movie poster, it honestly looks like Van Damme is going to be a space cop, which kind of is a bit confusing because this movie does not take place in space.
Well, this thing looks like the Stargate. This movie came out, I think, a year or two before Stargate, but
this thing
looks a lot like the Stargate, whereas the Stargate is going to blast you into a different galaxy. This one just blasts you into 10 years or 30 years or however far back you want to go in time.
Very true, very true. Cody, what were maybe your favorite parts of the movie? And go with me here. Did Ron Silver remind you of like a not as intimidating or maybe less intimidating Andy Garcia in Godfather 3? Does anybody?
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah. But now my favorite part of this, hands down, is I posted a picture earlier on the fan page, by the way, but when he's getting attacked by the robbers or whatever, he does the splits on the kitchen counter to avoid the electrocution. I thought that was just so hilarious. I loved it.
I feel like if Van Damme were to have a statue outside of any cinema in Belgium, that would be
that's his Jordan flying through the air.
Yes, exactly. It's him on the countertop because that guy's trying to electrocute him, and he does the split twice in this movie. He drops to the ground and does the nut punch to the one guy, and then he does the split on the counter.
My sister and I got into a shouting match, multiple shouting matches, around the time this movie came out, because she said it looked so stupid because she thought that it was a spoof movie because it's so dumb. Because that was one of the shots they used to sell the movie. Yeah, like, yeah, Van Damme, he's jumping on the counter. She's like, I thought it was a spoof movie. I thought it was like a Naked Gun movie. And I'm like, shut up! It's a serious movie! And but in the back of my head, I knew it's like, it does look pretty silly. But it's also, look, the floor was wet. And yeah, they were using a mechanism that will electrocute you. So what do? You better be flexible. This is why you work out.
Listen, I think for all of us here, none of us can do that split. But if you're going to jump onto something and there's a counter there, you're like going to run and grab for something. But we're not Van Damme. His natural reaction is to jump into a split. And if he can jump into a split and land on a counter, he's going to do it. Right, Cody?
Yeah, it's totally logical. I get it.
See?
You know the least logical part about that scene is that he is at Van Damme's home and he's just another night watching old footage of his wife who's dead now because she blew up in a house, and he's drinking a bottle of vodka. It's like it's something in the 90s just didn't click where they're like, oh no, we can have these dudes who are just clearly spend hours in the gym and have perfect diets, but in the movies, oh, they're going to be strung out alcoholics. It's like, no, alcoholics do not look like that.
And he never works out. He just watches old videotape of he and his wife like at a picnic. Come on. Now here's another like a small plot hole of some sorts is, okay, you're leaving this police officer to be in control of time travel, which in all intents and purposes is the most revolutionary thing that can ever happen to a society and also could totally ruin a society. And you are telling this guy that he can't go back in time to save his wife, but he can go back in time to stop people from robbing things. Probably the best guy to hire is the head of your group of cops.
See, that's a good point. Yes. That's a good point. I like the fact that he wasn't allowed to go back and save his wife.
Right.
I like that there was that moral conflict. However, having
he's
said
cop
that,
first, lover second.
Yeah, knowing that this guy goes home and drinks himself to sleep every night watching old footage of his dead wife, maybe that's not the best guy to have on the force.
Yeah, exactly. His whole psychiatric report really wasn't exactly crystal clear. There, Mark. So, Cody, if you were, is this one of your favorite Van Damme movies, or is this up there? I mean, I don't know, because you're a little ahead of the time of Van Damme. He's a little, way before you were, able to
see.
Do
I look
jump
at
kicks.
Van Damme again, Cody. Correct me if I'm wrong. I look at Van Damme to you, Van Damme and Seagal to you are what Schwarzenegger and Stallone were to like me and Macuga, because those guys had their prime, I think, a little bit before we were really coming into our consciousness. Because by the time I got really into Van Damme movies because I thought Schwarzenegger and Stallone had used their best stuff in the 80s when I wasn't really, around to watch R-rated movies.
I guess so, but I feel like Van Damme, I mean, he was really good between like 89 and 97.
Yeah.
So that was like our prime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've only seen... you guys are probably going to kick me for this, but I've only seen two Van Damme movies. I've seen this and I've seen Bloodsport. So,
I haven't
seen them much, unfortunately.
You picked two good ones. I have 10 that I'm going to text you as soon as we get done with this.
Your next two that you're going to need to see are Nowhere to Run, Hard Target, and Lionheart.
I'm gonna get rid of Nowhere to Run.
Nowhere to Run?
Because Nowhere to
Run...
But you
see Patricia Arquette's boobs, or Roseanne Arquette's boobs in it.
You see more than her boobs. However, in Double Impact, you get to see two Van Dammes.
Oh, that's true.
So,
Double Impact, two Van Dammes.
You get to see early 90s split screen, which is second to none. And Hard Target is definitely the one that you got. Hard Target was the one that really sold me. It was like, this is the guy. I need to start growing out my mullet now.
Hard Target we will do on this show, obviously. Every Van Damme movie will eventually be discussed on this program. Cody, thanks for calling in, man. Keep killing it on the fan page there. I'm glad you had a nice New Year's and you had fun on that NSYNC cruise.
And watch Hard Target.
It was a blast.
and go watch Hard Target, you jackwagon. Bye.
He just
hung up.
Doesn't have a lot of phone skills yet, but he's a good kid, so we don't bust his chops.
Yeah, not too much.
I'll tell you this. Here's what really sold me on Time Cop is that I was coming off a high from Hard Target, right? Because I'd seen Hard Target the previous year. And when Time Cop came out, I remember it was the summer before. Time Cop came out in September, I believe. It was a September release.
Okay.
And that summer, there was a movie with Alec Baldwin called The Shadow.
Yeah, I remember The Shadow.
And I saw The Shadow in the theater. And this is, before I was in the business, obviously.
Was The Shadow the one with Cindy Crawford? Is that what the one with...
That was Billy Baldwin.
Oh,
that was
Billy
Fair Game.
Fair
yeah.
Game.
Everybody. I saw that Friday morning. It came out.
That was a good
one. My mom would have taken me to see that Thursday night midnight, I would have seen that.
Yeah.
And gotten kicked out of the theater.
Yeah.
what's happening to all your socks, Mark? Don't worry about it, Mom. So I went to go see The Shadow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the previews are just something I love, because back then you just didn't know what was coming out.
Yes.
You had no idea. You could have seen, there could have been the Expendables back then. You had no idea what was coming out. And the trailer for Time Cop came on. And it's still to this day, I think it holds up as a trailer.
Oh, I watched it a couple times. It's great.
Because it starts out as the black and white Universal from the 20s. And it's the guy walking in. He's doing stock market. Then all of a sudden, here comes, oh no, something's happening. And it's Van Damme.
With a mullet.
With a mullet.
That mullet's so good.
And that scene in the movie is great. When
he
beats the crap out of the guy who tries the 1920s bare knuckle style.
Well, I believe the quote is, hold on.
I saw Tyson beat Spinks on TV.
Yeah, wait. Hold on. It's in here somewhere. Damn it. Here it is. I went 10 rounds with John L. Sullivan himself.
Yeah.
And Max Walker, in your best Van Damme, go ahead.
I saw Tyson beat Spinks on TV.
What accent was that?
I don't know. It's a very, the Belgium accent is very hard to get down. It's a tough dialect.
Why did you name Chance? Because my mama took one. okay. Yeah, I mean, the trailer still holds up. Again, the jump split on the thing. There are some really good, I feel like he could have had some unbelievable one-liners in this movie, and he didn't.
This movie, but I think that was a conscious decision on this movie.
And they
movie.
Never referenced, like, I'm bad at one-liners, which could have been cool.
No, they did, but because this movie took itself seriously. It took the subject matter seriously, and there's no better example of that than how they do explain some time travel elements, which I still love to this day, is that the same matter can't occupy the same space.
Oh, that's a really good thing.
At the same time,
yeah.
And it plays into the climax of the film, obviously, because you should be on Broadway with those kicks.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's just, it's a cool concept, and you start thinking about it, and it's just a nice gateway for somebody to get into time travel a little bit and think about these different theories that, yeah, what would happen if I tried to high-five my past self? Because isn't that kind of the same? Or are cells rebuilding themselves all the time? So is it a different set? What's a mitochondria?
That was definitely like the one... first time mitochondria has been said on this
powerhouse
program.
Of the cell.
That's the one thing that is totally different than any of the other time travel movies you've ever seen, is that That line of matter can't exist in the same space.
Yeah, yeah.
Which obviously comes to fruition in the, you know, the climax of the movie, the finale.
And then you look at a movie like Looper, which is also time travel, and it's Bruce Willis going back and looking at his former self, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and then they have that conversation at the diner, and it's like, are they going to touch each other?
Yeah.
Are they going to touch each other? Is it the same matter going to occupy the same space? Like, every time I see a time travel movie, that's the first thing I think. I'm going to see Project Almanac later today. I got a screening of that.
Done.
That's a time travel movie, and it's pretty close up, I think. I think, like, sometimes they're just going back to, like, the previous day, and just kind of messing around.
Like,
but
Butterfly
what's
Effect
gonna
to
happen?
A certain extent. Well, because you notice in this movie, which they do in Looper as well, is he gets kicked and gets a scar, and then his future self, like, gets a scar.
It's a great part.
That's a great part.
Yeah, and I love Ron Silver talking to his past self and being like, would you lay off the goddamn candy bars?
Yeah, you
love
badass.
That scene.
And then when he slams the dude's face in his chief of staff guy, and he's like, look, don't expect to be my chief of staff if my slamming your face in the side of the car is going to turn you into a sniveling worm. Like, come on, that's Senator Sweek right there.
And he had a great sense of humor, and that offset the seriousness of what Van Damme was going through, because this movie, it's almost like a coach who knows how to take advantage of a quarterback with maybe a limited skill set as far as acting goes. It's like, let's make Van Damme serious and brooding and thinking about his ex-wife or his dead wife, and let's let Ron Silver, because he's a great actor, have some more of the fun and be a nice offsetting foil for Van Damme's character.
He's kind of, you know, Ron Silver reminded me of a little bit is in Last Action Hero, the evil guy with like the fake eye,
Charles Dance from Game of Thrones.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I also think that Van Damme's inspiration for his mullet was definitely Mel Gibson in the first Lethal Weapon, because they have it's the same hair.
Nobody had greater. I see
Canadian tuxedo.
It's a tie for me between Mel Gibson's great hair in Lethal Weapon and Kurt Russell's hair in a lot of those 80 movies too, because Kurt
Big
Russell
Trouble,
can
Little
pull
China.
Off a mean mullet too.
That's some good stuff right
in
there.
In the tournament of mullets, those guys are meeting the finals.
Let's be honest, okay? You got Mel Gibson, who's Australian.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell's American.
Yes.
Van Damme, who's Belgian.
Mm-hmm.
All three represent their country really well in the mullet category.
Absolutely they do.
So, I mean, they're not competing against who has the greatest American mullet. They each represent a country in their own, you know, in their own way.
Yeah, and we got two of those guys in the latest Expendables movie, and we're getting Kurt Russell in the new Fast 7 movie, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think Kurt Russell's in it.
Out Paul Walker in Kurt Russell. Wow.
There's like a 20% chance I dream that, but I'm pretty sure that Kurt Russell is going to be in the new Fast 7.
I feel like to this day, if they put Kurt Russell in anything, I'll be like, it's got to be okay.
Kurt Russell's awesome.
Yeah, he's incredible. Here's my favorite part is when, my favorite one-liner, I guess, in the thing is when the dude gets in that frozen gas. Like anytime in, there's a shootout in a gas area, like the first Batman, this movie, Terminator, anytime there's railings everywhere, Gone in 60 Seconds, and they're shooting, it's bouncing off the railings, you know at some point somebody's going to get burned by steam or by like freezing thing, and this guy gets the freezing thing, and his arm is totally frozen like in Snowpiercer, and Van Damme just roundhouse kicks it off, and he says, have a nice day, and then he goes, I probably should have said freeze. This buddy goes, I think he got the picture. Oh, it's incredible.
Oh, like, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's and so there's good. Something that every kid was able to take to their biology class. It's like, we just, because of action, not anything we learned in school. This is why movies are more important than school, all you kids listening at home.
Kids do drugs, don't go to school.
I never learned about nitrous oxide or its powers from biology. I learned about it from watching 90s action movies. Uh-huh. And so now I know to this day, if I'm watching a film and I see nitrous oxide somewhere, that's going to freeze somebody. Yep. And it's going to be bad news for whoever gets on the wrong side of that.
Right. I mean, his whole arm, and he just kicked it off. And you, like, that was some pretty good CGI for 1994. If you notice, I mean, his whole arm, it looks like the mouth of a tremor.
Yeah, that, and then also when Ron Silver gets the scar, like what you're talking about, it just kind of forms on his face. It's a pretty cool looking special effect.
I know.
As was the time travel.
I agree. I'm not saying, here's the worst effect of the whole movie, in my opinion. It's 2004. Yep. Okay. Everything in the world looks exactly the same. All the buildings, all the houses, and they're driving cars that look absolutely absurd.
Well, the cars are like little homes, I feel. They're like little mobile homes. It was very redneck 2004.
Mark, do you see these cars in this movie? It is ridiculous.
They don't look not comfortable. They look like a nice, like if you're traveling somewhere, like in Europe, and you're like, you get in one of those train cars where you get to sleep overnight, you know? That's what it looks like. It looks like a five-star hotel version of that.
No, what they look like are X-Wing fighter beds that the cool kid in your neighborhood had, and they built them into cars.
But you don't have
They're all plastic. You don't even see the wheels.
You don't have to drive. You literally get in, you tell your car. Your car's like your Uber. I think this car would get you and me out of a lot of jams.
I know, sure
leaving the comedy store late at night. If you can just tell your car where to go as opposed to actually have to operate at home.
Very true. I'm just saying you could make a car that drives itself not look like 14 microwaves all packed into one another, and then with a little antenna and like little roundy balls on them. And really, it looks like something you would draw in the second grade. Like, this is what a futuristic tank looks like. Put the senator in it. I'm sorry, those cars were absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, but they didn't have a lot in the way of style, but the substance holds up.
Now, I think the beautiful part is how this ends. Is it's a callback to the matter.
Yeah.
So, spoiler alert, if you guys haven't seen this, how Senator McComb kills himself is that his future self and his normal self occupy, excuse me.
Whoa.
First sneeze ever on this show.
Yeah, we need one of those sneeze buttons. They have welcome back. We're going to give away those Eddie Money tickets. Extra! Okay, we got Jake Isles Band coming
Where the
up.
Hell was Phil on that one? Damn it! Love you, Phil. Is that he occupies the same matter. They melt into the T2 liquid metal body thing, and then they just disappear like flubber. And then he's able to run out of his house with his wife and then travels back to normal time in 1990. He travels from 1994 to the future to 2004, and he meets his son who has an incredible bowl cut.
That's right. And it really is, it speaks to the best part about parenting is that if you could somehow fast forward all those years when he had to change diapers and make sure that your kid is okay and normal and isn't going to be like one of those idiot mongoloids that just attacks other kids on the playground. He's 8 years old. He's pretty well adjusted.
Yes.
And now Van Damme can just enjoy his normal son that the wife pretty much had to raise, I guess, with Max Walker, but he didn't have to remember any of that. He didn't have to go through any of that stuff.
Yeah. He missed all the late nights of diaper changing, all that stuff. When you think about it, that's maybe a beauty part of time travel.
What I'm saying, makes those cars worth it. Just chill out in the back of a car that's driving you around. You don't have to change diapers, and you're complaining about
it. Shut up back there!
I'm sorry futuristic cars don't have a spoiler on them, Josh. But yeah, this movie was clearly, and when you look at Van Damme's career after this movie, it's mind-boggling me because this really set him up to have to be the next great action star, to be at the level of a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger, and then he made Sudden Death, and it was like, okay. We're treading water here. And then he just started making these really bad movies that eventually just...
They were the same thing.
It was Double Team and stuff like that. And he had a movie with Rob Schneider, and he just didn't get the right script. I think another thing that hurt him is that he directed and starred in The Quest, which was just a train wreck. Yeah. And it's just like you're overstepping your bounds when you say, no, I'm going to direct and star in this movie that was just really, really not good.
And I think Seagal fell into the same kind of thing. It was just like the same movie.
You just couldn't get Seagal away from the Golden Corral either. Steven, please stop eating.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there was something about Van Damme that eventually like lent himself to being unliked by people in the sense of like, he was kind of a scumbag.
He seemed like he might be a cocky douche. You couldn't really tell for sure. I know he had drug problems in the mid 90s too, so that doesn't help anything. And then by the time you come out of that, then you start to have these guys like Statham come along, and like Jet Li and Jackie Chan was coming back into prominence in the States, and The Rock and all these other action stars. And it's like, hey dude, love to see in The Expendables.
But I think the other thing too was that the action franchise went in a different direction. It went into like almost buddy cop comedy, cartoonish action, where these ones like were legit action one-liners, and then people kind of started making fun of the one-liners. It just went in a different direction, and then the rom-com kind of took over, and the action film became kind of this punchline, really and truly, because we'd been inundated with it.
And you had the second coming of the huge blockbuster, like what Independence Day was, and going forward, and that really started with Jurassic Park, because you could have the huge event movies now, and then that just made movies that were like this, or like a Hard Target, where it's like, no, that's a cool movie, but you gotta open them at certain times of the year, and they're just not going to do the business that what you see comic book movies do now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he'd already kicked everybody's ass too. It's like kind of you got to evolve, and he never really thought that he had to evolve until the cinema came back to him.
Yeah, and then even like having the balls to tell Stallone, like, I don't want to be in Expendables 1, you got to pay me more money.
Yeah.
Then you see what that movie does, and you see where your own career is, and it's like, maybe I should be in that one.
Been in
but look, I still think, after seeing him in Expendables 2, I still think Van Damme can be a player in action films.
Absolutely.
It's got to open the right way, and you got to take something from the Stallone model, what he's been able to do, but he can still open a movie.
Do you think that Van Damme should have done like a Time Cop 2, like turn this into a little bit of a franchise, or do you think it wound up so nicely?
I think that by the time you would have had a Time Cop 2, it would have been the late 90s now. Mm-hmm. And I think that the landscape had just changed so much to where I think if he was going to do a sequel, that would have been the one.
Yeah.
More so than like a Hard Target or like a Double Impact or maybe even like Bloodsport. Yeah. But I think that time has passed. But I mean, again, it's like,
because nowadays, like if Time Cop 1 would have done crazy good, like, okay, let's take it in the Taken model, right? Time Cop 1 does awesome. It's critically acclaimed. Time Cop 2 is already in the mix when Time Cop 1 is getting critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Same as like how Taken and then Taken 2 and now Taken the third time, he's going to kill everybody for the third time. Like that's, and I think Time Cop 3 would have been like, they're dismantling the thing and he has to go back and rescue the world, would have been like the capper of the Time Cop 3, the franchise. We just got these one-offs with Seagal or with Van Damme. He never really had a franchise.
They tried to make Universal Soldier a franchise, but that was too late in the game. That was too little too late. You know what's funny is that Time Cop really shot itself in the foot because they only went to 2004.
Yes.
So it's like by the time a sequel came out, you can already see that we're probably not going to have time travel around by now.
That's why it's like, you know, those futuristic cars that they made were better for Fifth Element, and Fifth Element took place like 500 years in the future, something crazy like that. I mean, you can make a futuristic movie now. Go 150, 200 years so we never have to have the 2015 argument, you know, over in Hill Valley.
Yeah, give yourself some breathing room.
Exactly. That's why you date multiple girls at the same time so that a different night's... I'm kidding. Kids, don't do that.
You're right, that one.
Thank you guys for watching. Mark, thanks for being on the program.
Dude, it was great. I love talk. I can literally talk about this stuff all day and all night with anybody. I don't care if I'm at a bar with strangers. I can talk Van Damme movies for a long time.
Go out, watch Time Cop. Let us know what you thought. Next week... we won't have Ben Begley in yet. His first show will be Tuesday, January 20th. Again, we live stream here 1 p.m. PST every Tuesday. Next Tuesday, they requested it at Chili's. Two of the main parts of Shmovo, Alicia Malone and Ken Napsok, want to talk Spice World. So, I'm going to have to watch Spice World and thanks, Phil. It's one of Alicia Malone's favorite and apparently Ken Napsok's favorite. I have no idea why. I've never watched the movie. Never was I tempted to watch it, but I'm looking forward to it. As you guys know out there in Shmovo, I like just about everything. So, Tune in next Tuesday, 1 p.m. PST. Mark, where can the kids find you? They know.
At 5150FS.
They know.
And all that stuff. And make sure you guys subscribe to Popcorn Talk and to Schmoes Know, our main YouTube channel. Next couple of weeks, I'll be at Raleigh, North Carolina this weekend at Goodnight's Comedy Club. And then 2 weeks from now, I'll be at Helium in Portland, Oregon.
Ooh, Helium's a great club in Oregon. That's a good one.
Yeah, good
and,
stuff.
And guys, my birthday is Thursday, January 29th. We're hoping to get the my YouTube channel, youtube.com/thecasualmafia, to 10,000 subscribers. 10,000 subscribers by January 29th. If so, we're going to have a really special 100th episode if you guys get us to that 10,000 subscribers.
Let's do it. Let's and if we don't happen. Do it by January 29th, we'll just hop in a time travel vehicle, go back in time, hope we're not the Vollmer twins, and do it all over again.
Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you next time. What's your guilty movie pleasure?
Happy birthday.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.